Spark, stories from advocates for global change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy.
Welcome back to the second episode of the AI section of this podcast, where we meet and discuss with scientists and show their diverse paths to get into the field. I'm here again today hosting with Tanish.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Zora.
So last time we met Silvia Quateroni from the Swiss Data Science Center. If you haven't listened to that episode, definitely check it out. She talked a lot about general chances and challenges of AI. Moving on to today, where you will get to hear from Andrea Rizzoli. He is the director of a world-renowned institute for AI in Ticino.
Yes, the Dalemole Institute for Artificial Intelligence is located in Lugano and is a part of the University of Lugano and the University of Applied Sciences in Lugano. I met with Andrea Rizzoli online. We had a great conversation about AI's societal impact. He's a leading expert with over 200 publications. We talked about how AI consumes resources, its role in fighting climate change, and asked the big question, how biased is AI? I think we should start off with a quick introduction from our guest.
Yes. Hi, everybody. My name is Andrea Rizzoli. I'm the director of IZIA, that is the Dalemole Institute for Artificial Intelligence, here in Lugano in southern Switzerland. And my background is in engineering, control engineering. I graduated many years ago, and I did a PhD also in computer science and control engineering. And I've been working on resources management problems from different perspectives, trying to use mathematical techniques to improve the efficiency of systems, especially natural resources, but also energy systems.
I mean, just coming around that, what is your current role in the discussion and research about AI?
Well, you know, I think that being a scientist, especially a research scientist, is a bit like being a football player. The more you get old, the more you're less performing in terms of your ability to invent new algorithms and to be really brilliant at the technical level. And you move to management level to drive maybe teams of researchers to be a bit like the football manager. So this is a bit my role at the moment. I'm anyway very interested in a number of research projects that I try to follow, and also in the implication of how AI could affect our society, and also how AI can be successfully employed in research, in fostering science and advancing our research capabilities.
How has the field of AI evolved from when you were a student till now?
Well, since I was a student many years ago, it has evolved tremendously. When I was doing my master thesis, I was working on a computer that was very weird. It was called a Lisp machine. It was a computer that was programmable using this Lisp language that was designed for AI applications. But at the time, AI was very different from what it is today because it was mostly rule-driven. There were rule-based systems, so-called expert systems, where you could encode the human knowledge and procedures in a set of if-then-elses, this type of rules. Now, AI has evolved towards a different approach that is totally data-driven. And then neural networks, in particular deep neural networks, are the main tool that we are using to deliver the AI solutions we see today.
What are some examples of these AI solutions that are around us, but most people don't realize about them?
Well, I guess that one of the applications that maybe it's always working in the background and you never notice is the voice recognition on your mobile phone. And why I'm mentioning this particular AI solution, because the algorithm that is at the base of that was invented here in Lugano by Jürgen Schmidhuber in the 90s. Jürgen is one of the leading AI researchers at the world level. And at the time, he was a young research scientist from Germany that recently moved to Lugano at IZIA. And he was doing research in neural networks with many layers and with a so-called recurrent structure. So the neural network was able not only to process inputs and recognize outputs, but to correlate sequences of data together across a timeline. And this was essential to process language and spoken language. And this was in the 90s. So he laid together with his PhD student, Sepp Hochreiter, the foundations, mathematical foundations for this. But the computers at the time weren't as powerful as they are today, and it was not possible to implement these algorithms. So we have to wait till the 10th of this century when the GPU arrived, and then it was possible to implement these algorithms at a scale, and now they are running everywhere, also on your mobile phone.
Coming back to the topic of AI and society, what global challenges can AI help solve in like the near, mid, and long-term future?
Well, good question, but a very tough one, because it can solve clearly many, many problems, but it can also create many others. So some people try to sell us the concept that AI will be able to solve climate change problems, energy sufficiency problems, and this type of things. But the way AI is heading nowadays with these large language models, with the enormous use of amount of resources that we can't even imagine, not only electrical energy, but also all the materials that are needed to produce these supercomputers, the concrete that is used to build the data centers, the water that is used to cool them, I mean, this has an impact on the environment that is difficult to establish. There is research ongoing to evaluate what are the pros and cons of the different technical solution provided by artificial intelligence. But I think that many researchers and especially many companies try to put this type of problem a bit under the carpet or in a corner so that it is not on a prominent place.
How could we address this problem?
We have the energy label for cars, for light bulbs. We could have the energy label for the searches and the actions that we do on our screens. Like I've seen a recent study that says that a ChatGPT search uses 10 times more energy than a Google search, but a Google search is already very energy intensive. And we don't know also what is the carbon footprint of our use of social network. All of this information could be made more transparent so that users are more aware about the impact of their actions. I think that if you cannot measure it, you can optimize it and you cannot enhance it. So I think that we need to start making this type of data available to the public.
I see. I also see that you're part of working on how AI approaches can help manage natural resources. One of these projects is the Energenius project. How can AI help with the efficient use of natural resources?
Well, in this case, Energenius project is an EU project where the aim is to build a sort of energy guru that can help you in managing a resource that is not natural, man-made, mostly energy, but in an efficient way. So we have to balance the various trade-offs in how we invest our money to make, for instance, our households more efficient from a structural point of view. Like, I don't know, I buy new insulation for my building, I install some photovoltaic panels on the roof, but also changing our behavior, because sometimes there are many little things that we can do and we are not aware that can save lots of energy in the household. Or we maybe don't change our habits in terms of maybe the number of washing machines that we do every week, but we focus them in a particular time of the day when the sun is shining, because that is the moment when we have more photovoltaic production that would go wasted otherwise.
What are some other key environmental challenges that AI can help with in the future?
AI can be used in climate modeling to better understand what are the impacts of climate change, because I have to tell you a so-called inconvenient truth. The fact is that we cannot mitigate any longer the climate, because there will never be an agreement between the north of the planet and the south. The north is not ready to relinquish the privileges that we enjoyed until today, and the south has not enough power to make this happen. So climate change is happening, and it will happen faster, and the extreme events will be stronger and more damaging. What can AI do for us is to help us in adaptation. Adaptation will be the key word for the future. We need to adapt to climate change since we cannot fight against it. So we need to develop, for instance, new crops that will be suited to the new environmental conditions, to the new climatic conditions. And this is where the AI tools can help research scientists in agriculture domain to synthesize, for instance, new plant species that are more resistant to droughts, or crops that are more suited to a particular type of soil with a different climatic pattern. And this is one thing. Another thing is forecasting the impact of extreme, for instance, rainfall events. We've seen what happened in Valencia with warning systems based on AI, coupled with the digital terrain model. It is possible to have short-term forecasts of where and how much water is going to arrive and what will be the impact, so that you can evacuate people, reducing the number of false alarms that you issue, so that people will be trustful when you tell them that they have to act and to leave their homes. Because these type of things are going to happen more and more in the future, and we can use AI to mitigate the impact of these things.
Some people say that generative AI tools such as ChatGPT can be biased in terms of what they produce as output. What is AI bias exactly, and how can it be stopped in newer models?
This is a real problem. The bias is not really in the tool. The bias is in the data. So the tools, they learn from the data, and the data we feed into these tools is biased because it contains our prejudices. It contains the decisions that we've made in the past that were decision based on the mainstream view of the world, the role of the man with respect to the role of the women, these type of things, the gender imbalances, and so on. So all of this is there in the past data. And if you train tools on these data, then you're going to have these biases replicated in the decisions made by the algorithms. So how to prevent this is to develop methods to analyze the data and to understand if there are biases in these data before training the AI tools and the algorithms that will make decisions based on this data. And there is lots of research that is ongoing on this.
How can AI be regulated or controlled to avoid improper uses?
Is there an answer to this? I mean, how can we regulate weapons in order that they are not abused? We see abuses of weapons every day, unfortunately, especially in these times. So I do not think that it will ever be possible to regulate AI against abuses. Or, I mean, it will be possible to regulate, but if we are pessimistic, we will be certain that somebody will abuse AI. So it is important to have regulations. It is important to have agreements that are valid all over the world. We cannot have an agreement for Switzerland and one for the US and one for Europe. We need to all agree on the ethical principles of what AI can do. Will we get to a homogeneous regulation all over the world? I have some serious doubts, because there are now, the geopolitical situation is totally against that type of agreements, but we can never relinquish our hopes.
What is the role of a scientist in this? For example, are scientists actively involved in giving advice to governmental bodies that make such policies for people regulating the use of AI?
Well, definitely. I mean, this is an essential part of the job of a scientist, to make the politicians and the society at large aware of what could be the implications of some discoveries. I've participated in some panels. There are many other colleagues that are providing consultancies to government, to NGOs, and so on. And among these, the most notable is also Jeffrey Hinton, a recent winner of the Nobel Prize, that resigned from Google to warn people about the potential dangers of AI. Maybe his vision is a bit extreme, but definitely is worth mentioning and keeping a close eye on what he's saying.
What is your advice for students eager to get into this field? What are the chances and challenges that they might face?
Well, there are many chances because there is so much interest in AI currently. And even if I think that there is a lot of hype, especially on the company side, they try to sell us products that maybe we don't really need. I think that AI is going to transform our world, the way that we are using data, the way that we are making sense out of data. So there are many interesting chances for students that are interested in contributing to the advancement of AI, but also becoming expert users of AI. Because what is important, I think, to consider is that in the future, in any type of profession, there will be some sort of collaboration with AI. And this is the type of AI tools that we are developing at the Institute. AI tools that are not replacing the human, but they are supporting the human, like a bit of a virtual exoskeleton. And one thing that my colleague Marco Zaffalon often says is that your job will not be taken by an AI, but by a person that knows how to use an AI. So this is my advice to young people that are starting their studies now, is you might not study a scientific discipline, but even if you are in humanities or in other social sciences and so on, remember that AI tools will be important for your profession in the future.
I see. Now I would like to come back to the topic of AI and young people. Most importantly, I would like to ask, how can AI be taught to young students earlier than university, perhaps in school?
We are working about that. We are part of a working group here that tries to understand what is the potential for using AI in, if not primary, in secondary schools. And it is important that the new generations will be able to collaborate with AI and to know how to use an AI in a proper manner, AI tools, AI algorithms, and not only to develop them. And there is also the risk that the excessive reliance on AI tools could hinder some of our capabilities of writing text, making a complex structured discourse, of understanding text when we read a long piece of text, and to make a summary, all things that the AI tools can do very well. And therefore, I do not think that we should totally delegate this type of task during the education of young students to AI tools. At the same time, we have to stimulate the interest in scientific disciplines in children and in young students, because without this type of hard knowledge, it is not possible to advance research in this field. And unfortunately, the trend in Switzerland especially is against this. We see the interest in mathematical, engineering, and technical sciences decreasing over the years. And this is something that is a bit worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, I've also faced some similar problems from my school as well regarding the use of AI and everything. But I would also like to ask, what are some skills that you need to get a general understanding of AI and how it works?
Well, let me think. The mathematics behind that is not overly complex, but definitely you need to understand at least derivatives and these type of things. And statistics is also very important. So these are the main mathematics and statistics are fundamental tools to be able to understand this type of algorithms. Computer programming, it's important, but here we can see that AI is being already of help, because one of the things that AI is doing very well is to support people writing software programs. And it can increase their productivity in some cases in testing the software, in doing a number of things related to software development. But nevertheless, the logic of programming is fundamental. I think that it will not be important to know a specific language, a specific programming language, but logical thinking, maybe at a more abstract level, a more fundamental one, will be still essential. So, well, the traditional schools that are offering courses at the bachelor level in these disciplines are definitely a prerequisite for becoming then an AI expert and going on to a master.
What really got you interested in AI, and how did you enter this field?
I thought it were interesting problems, and I like the environmental part of trying to model systems that were not so well-defined, like mechanical or electronical components, where everything is given for certain. You know that the component, the mechanical component, behaves in this manner no matter what. The environment includes also the human component. It involves many different animal species. And I was fascinated by how you could use mathematical and statistical tools to model these type of systems. So maybe this is why I was interested in this type of research.
To end off this interview, I would like to ask you one question. What is the one word that you would use to define AI in the next 10 years?
Surprising. I don't know. I think that AI will be surprising in the next 10 years. And it will be surprising in many ways because it will enable us to do things that we never expected. So I'm quite optimistic about how AI will be used in the future, despite all the bad things and the possible unintended consequences we discussed before.
Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for clarifying this topic for us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to be with you here today.
This was Andrea Rizzoli from the Dalle Molle Institute of Artificial Intelligence in Lugano. So I am very interested in the climate modeling capacities of new AI tools. I really agree with Andrea when he says that we can't fight all the consequences of climate change, but that we'll have to adapt to many changes in the coming years. If AI can help with these adaptations, I think it's a great opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with you, but it's also very worrying how many resources, especially energy, AI consumes, and how this data is never made transparent by big companies. Regulation of AI should be a global effort and a global issue, but geopolitical challenges between countries make worldwide agreements extremely difficult to obtain.
So another thing I'm very glad he mentioned is that AI tools are really just as biased as the data sets they are trained on. This becomes a problem in a world where, for example, medical data mainly stems from white men, which often makes treatment for women or people of color inadequate.
Therefore, all researchers should make an effort to ensure that their data is as unbiased as possible, to ensure that the models they train are as unbiased as possible.
Yeah, and although it is, of course, almost impossible to obtain a completely bias-free data set, I think even being aware of your biases in the data already makes a huge difference in order to obtain a more representative study.
One more thing I understood from this discussion was that AI will not replace jobs, but it will be a tool that enhances human capabilities. The future workforce, it needs to be AI literate, even in non-technical fields.
So that was it for today. In the next episode, we'll get to hear from two early career researchers talking about how they get into the field of AI research. Additionally, I asked them how students nowadays use AI as a study tool, which I am sure concerns many of us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Spark. Stories from advocates for global change. A podcast from the Swiss Young Academy. Hosted by Julia Knuchel, Tanish Shindy, and Zora Althaus. Produced by the Podcast Schmiede.